Hi, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Friday, August 30th, 1996. In the fireside room this morning, our speaker is John Bucca. Today he will be continuing his series on the Ten Commandments. Today's session number is 4 and is titled, The Sixth Commandment. It's about love. Let's listen in.
This is called Goodbyes Are Always Difficult. My name is Alan. I grew up in a military home. When I was young, we were always moving because my dad was stationed all over the country at different military bases. I never got close to anyone because I knew we would never stay long in one place, and I always hated saying goodbye. I guess I thought things would never be the same and always change. And I never quite got used to that. I never, ever liked that. I've been a pastor for 20 years. In those 20 years, I've had to say many goodbyes to parishioners and friends when they have died, to parishes as I have left them for new calls. Whenever either event happens, I'm always tempted to return to the little child within me, that child that has felt so abandoned and so alone. But then I remember what my pastor once told me about the word goodbye. He always said that the word goodbye came from an old English word that meant God be with you. I think about the meaning of the word. I think about how difficult it must have been for the disciples to say goodbye to Jesus. I think, and I begin to understand. I begin to know how the disciples gained strength from the fact that God was with them as Jesus left them and ascended into heaven. I begin to understand how Jesus leaving gave them new strength to continue God's mission here on earth. I gained strength from those disciples and from the word goodbye. Goodbye has become my confession of faith. It's become the inspiration for me to continue my ministry. In the midst of my feelings of being alone and abandoned, I believe God is with me. I believe I am never alone. And I'm convinced God's presence in my heart gives me the strength and courage to remain faithful to my calling and faithful to my Lord. And I trust that God will continue to give you the strength to do so also. Now, the sixth commandment, it's about love. First of all, the sixth commandment is what?
Thou shalt not commit adultery.
Shall not commit adultery. Tell me, what's the ideal marriage in the Bible? What is the ideal marriage in the Bible? Anybody know?
Not looking at anybody else.
Not looking at anybody else. I'm interested in between two parties. Who are the two parties with whom the ideal marriage is consummated?
A man and a woman.
Man and a woman? Somebody else? Anybody else have a clue?
Adam and Eve.
Adam and Eve? Somebody else?
Two believers.
True believers?
Two believers.
Two believers. Anybody else?
God and yourself.
Good. Excellent. God and yourself, or God and the church. In the Old Testament, when God knows God's people, the word for knowledge in the Old Testament is the same word as when a man knows his wife physically and intimately. If you go into the New Testament, Christ is the bridegroom. And who is the bride?
The church.
The church is the bride. So the ideal model of marriage, first and foremost, is the relationship that God has with God's people. Keep that in mind. Secondly, the word adultery. Anybody know what that means? When I was a kid, I thought that meant don't mess around. Okay? What does the word adultery really mean? How are we going to talk about it if we don't know what it means?
Separation.
Separation? Anybody else? What does the word adultery mean?
Sex outside of marriage.
Sex outside of marriage? Somebody else. The word adultery means non-genuine. Non-genuine. If you have something that is unadulterated, it is the genuine article. Therefore, adultery can mean everything about sex. It can mean nothing about sex. It can mean everything about faithfulness. Okay? Third example as we get into this. My 14-year-old daughter, who will soon be 15, came home from school last year in 8th grade and said, "Dad, we talked about sex in school today and health." I said, that's interesting. I want to hear about that. What did your teacher say about sex? Well, he told us that sex should be reserved for our lifelong partner. Okay, I want you to examine that statement. What's right about that statement? What's wrong about that statement?
Doesn't say anything about marriage.
One, it doesn't say anything about marriage. What else?
Doesn't say what sex is.
Okay, doesn't say what sex is. What else? The big difficulty with that statement is especially for 14, 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old young people is that I remember when I was 17 and I thought somebody was my lifelong partner. And thank God she didn't end up to be my lifelong partner. And I know plenty of cases where sex has transpired between two young adults based on the premise that I'll love you, honey, and I will love you for the rest of my life. And it's interesting how short the rest of the life of that relationship becomes. So don't delude yourself into believing that the person that you date at 15, 16, or 17 is necessarily your lifelong partner, number one. And number two, don't confuse the hormonal drives that you have for love as well as marriage. Now, the difficulty with all of this is that if you're healthy young people, you're going to believe that your marriage and your relationships are going to be different than your parents. I mean, that's a given. That's part of who you are as young people. You're going to look at your mom and your dad and say, "Heck, marriage is going to be much more of what mom and dad have. They never see each other. They argue a lot. They don't get along. My marriage is going to be different." And you're going to look at ministers who are in their 30s and 40s and 50s when you come to them for premarital counseling, and you're going to think, they don't know squat about what my relationship is with my loved one. And that's the challenge of premarital counseling for the church, because most people come to ministers and they say, "Hey, don't confuse me with the facts, Pastor. I'm in love. And if I'm in love, this is going to last forever." Okay? Now, throughout all this, especially young people, you have the right to say no. And we're going to look into that. I need a male volunteer, preferably a young person. Sean. Read it, please. Up to there. Page 18.
Chuck is a 15-year-old sophomore who attends a local high school. He has been controversial because he has had the courage to speak up about his views on chastity.
Chastity. Does anybody know what the word chastity means? Jason.
Chastity is not sexually active.
Correct. If I am chaste, I make a commitment to be non-sexually active and not to have intercourse. Okay? means I'm a virgin. Go ahead.
And faithfulness in marriage and the place that sex should have within the bonds of marriage. This is Chuck's story. This year I came to a decision. It really wasn't that difficult to make. Some people say I'm too young to make it. Others say I will never be able to follow through on it, especially when I meet the right girl. I say it's important that I make my stand now and that my age has nothing to do with what I have decided for myself as well as what I wish others would decide. You see, I've made a decision to remain chaste. Until I am married. That means that I do not intend to have sex with anyone until after I'm married. I think it goes like this. God gave us our bodies, and God gave us strong sexual feelings as well. Mind you, I don't think they're wrong at all, but I think the only way they should be acted upon is when two people are married. For me, sex is a sign of love and of commitment. I want my marriage to begin on a note of trust and not have my partner worried that she can never trust me. What I expect from myself and I expect from the woman I plan to marry as well. I want to marry a woman who also has waited until marriage. I want to trust her too. I see my commitment to a chaste life as a wonderful gift that I am giving to my future wife. After all, when two people are married, shouldn't they want to give the best of themselves to one another? I also see my commitment as a way to continue to protect myself as well as my future wife from all the crazy things and diseases that happen in this world of ours today. I don't mind taking the stand I've taken, even if it means that a lot of kids will make fun of me. I'm really glad that even sports stars are talking about the benefits of a position like mine. I sure hope we all do what we can to really turn sex back to what it was intended to be used as a gift within marriage.
Okay, before we break into small groups, a couple facts. One is, fact, that probably by the time youth reach the age 18, almost 80% of them have made a decision to become sexually active. 80%. Fact, if there is a teenage pregnancy, one of the two members are teenagers, and the decision to be married is followed through, there is a 90% chance within the first 5 years of that marriage that that marriage will fail. With those facts in mind, break into small groups. We have about 33 people, maybe five groups of six. Make sure there is an adult. Try to do three and three, or make sure you're in groups, kids especially, that you're comfortable with. Okay? But break into small groups. Make sure everybody has copies or has available copies of this. Share and designate a group leader. Go over the questions. How can remaining chaste be a gift to your future spouse? How can Chuck's position be helpful? Okay? Let's do at least four, possibly five. You got a big group there. The reason we want smaller groups, we want everybody to have the chance to talk. So why don't you move your group down? Okay, what I'm really interested in is the second question. How you answer the second question. Sometimes the church feels not bold enough to encourage people to say no because we're so afraid that we're going to offend the people that have said yes before marriage. So the second question deals with that issue. Here we're talking about chastity and the right to say no, when in reality, perhaps some people in this room have already given up that right. Okay? Now, our job is not to create guilt. But how can a position like Chuck's, or to shame people, let's put it that way, how can a person like a position like Chuck's be helpful to people who have already said yes? Your group, what did you talk about?
We talked about why it's so hard to like say no and stuff, and like
genetics. Hormonally.
And like,
hormones.
What's going on at our school?
Two
people getting expelled for having sex on campus.
Okay. Okay. So it's hard. The question is, how can people like Chuck help those people? Did you deal with that?
Yes, we did. Earlier, that's not what they're remembering.
Well,
okay.
What was so amazing about it was they were only in seventh grade.
Okay.
One of the things that I had brought up in the group was that for people that maybe have already had sex, they can see that Chuck has taken a stand, and that sometimes that they will experience regrets following the relationship that has ended.
Okay.
And that they can then be motivated to at least start anew.
Okay. I always say that God gave us the commandments because of common sense. And the commonsensical thing is, when people have sex outside of marriage, they open themselves up to a vulnerability of a lot of pain and hurt. Okay? But good answer, that Chuck's stance says that, it's possible to make a stand about this issue and feel okay. Okay. This group here, what did you talk about? Second question. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Can you share?
Well, we just said that the same thing that I can influence the kids already have, they still have a chance to start over.
Okay, they have a chance to start over. This group.
What we said was if you think that sometimes you get to thinking that everybody else is like, everybody else is doing it, so why shouldn't I? But if just one person stands up and says, no, I'm doing it this way, well, then you won't think you're so weird, because it's like this conformity thing.
Okay, so if only one person stands up, then not everybody is doing it.
Right.
And that's helpful. This group over here, in the corner. Tell me your name again. Tell me your name again.
I'm Nels.
Nels, go ahead.
Well, I think we said, like group two, that you can always change your position.
Okay.
And it's a reminder that that's possible.
Okay.
But same here.
Okay, now, in your groups, you're going to be given a piece of paper as a group. This is the task. And you're going to get 3 minutes to do this. You're developing a hormonal survival chart.
Oh.
All right?
Yeah.
And your hormonal survival chart is going to say 7 ways to say no when your hormones want to say yes. Okay? 7 ways to say no when your hormones want to say yes. Okay? As a group.
That's easy to do now.
Well, as a group. Give me 7 new ways to say no when your hormones want to say yes. Okay? Think of the converse argument. I love you, honey. Everybody else is doing it. Think of all the other lines that guys and girls can. I want to have your baby. You know? God gave you your brain. God gave you your sexuality. Both are good. However, you think with this organ. You do not think with this organ below your belt. Okay? Remember that. And we confuse things when we fail to think with this. Seven ways to say no when your hormones want to say yes. What do you got?
Okay, say no, walk away, say...
Okay, hold it. Say no, walk away.
I think I hear my mom calling me.
I think I hear my mom calling me. Okay?
Make your beeper go off and say, oh, I better answer that.
Make your beeper go off, okay?
Wait till you're married.
Wait till you're married.
Explain that to him. Don't date when you feel that way.
Don't date when you feel that way.
And stop before you go too far.
Stop before you go too far. Now, interesting thing that Laurel said about my mom said I can't. I've always told my kids, whenever they're in a tight situation and they don't want to do something, it's okay to blame me. It's okay to blame me. That's why I'm there. Okay? Seven ways to say no when your hormones want to say yes. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead.
We got to think about your parents.
Okay.
Take a closer look.
Take a closer look. Okay. That's a unique one. Go ahead.
Think about disease. Think about pregnancy.
Take a cold shower.
Think of emotional costs. Do something else.
That's good. Okay.
You got three more.
Oh, my. Three more. Go ahead.
Don't subject yourself to temptation.
Okay, don't put yourself in the position. That's a wonderful one. Okay, go ahead.
Say a prayer. And talk it over before you commit.
Okay, the disease one. Let me paint a scenario for you. We lived in a small rural town in Minnesota for 12 years. Our infectious disease control nurse came in to talk to our kids about sex. She painted this picture. Say that a female classmate of yours, when that female classmate is in sixth grade, has a father that visits a prostitute regularly in Hennepin Avenue in Minneapolis, who is an IV drug user, who at the same time is abusing sexually your classmate. Now, the father picks up AIDS from the IV drug user, continues to sexually abuse his daughter, and dies. You start to date her, and you decide to become sexually active with her. Now, far-fetched? I don't know, ask Magic Johnson. Okay? And remember, contrary to what Magic Johnson said on Arsenio Hall, the only safe sex is what?
No sex.
Okay, this group, seven ways to say no when your hormones want to say yes.
Take a cold shower.
Okay.
Okay, let your actions tell the other person whether you want to or not.
Say more about that.
Resistance and things like that.
Okay. Polish the car handle. Okay, go ahead. The car handle. Go ahead.
Say what you want. Tell the person what kind of things that you want physically and what you don't, your guidelines kind of.
You know, that's really great. People in marriage don't even do that. But that's great. Say what you want. Okay? Go ahead, Kelly.
Listen to your faith.
Okay.
Read the Bible. And my favorite was play miniature golf.
Play miniature golf. Okay. Play miniature golf. I had a one. I'm not going to say it. Go ahead. Seven ways.
Cold shower. I've got a headache.
I like that. Heard that a lot. No, I'm going to go ahead. Okay, listen to this. I like that. I love you too much. Okay, go ahead. You got three.
I'm too young.
Too young?
What would Jesus do? The sixth commandment.
Okay.
Thinking about future spouse.
Okay, future spouse. Okay, go ahead. Seven ways.
Well, we only came up with four. Most of them have been mentioned.
Okay.
And I thought I have the clearer here, but this lady mentioned it. say no, it gives me a headache, you know, it's one of them.
Sure. You bet.
If you really love me, you know, we need to wait.
Okay, if you really love me, we need to wait.
Basically the same, if you truly respect me, then don't ask me to do
okay.
that.
And you're gonna hear the opposite.
Right.
You really will hear the opposite.
That's right.
If you really love me, you will.
Right.
Okay, now, stand up. We always get exercise in this class. Stand up. Some of this is ideal mate time, folks. Listen, please. True is over there, false is over there. It is important for both the man and the woman to come from similar family backgrounds. True?
Absolutely false.
False. It is important for both the man and the woman to come from similar family backgrounds. True? False. Kelly.
Then I get to go.
Okay, interesting. Okay, Kelly, please, stay with me. You're doing a good job. I know you're anxious about going home. Stay with me, Jeremy. Okay? Kelly, go ahead.
Okay, after like the Korean Wars and things like that, people would go over there and they'd fight and they'd have like tons of problems. And then you see all the Vietnam people coming back and like marrying people from that exact same country after they just fought that country because they lived there, because they got to know that people. They're completely different, absolutely, but they still love that other person because of their beliefs and different things. The country that we live in, the U.S., has hundreds of different types of people and different ethnic groups and all that, and people who have so many different types of cultures that are nothing alike from any other.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's... Yeah. You can't really say, oh, I can't marry you because you're not exactly from my hometown. You don't look like my family.
Okay.
You don't eat turkey with the chickens.
I tell you what, you're telling me something very good, okay? And the good thing that you're telling me about is that maybe this is a cultural Midwestern bias, okay? Which maybe people like those of us who live in the Midwest need to hear. Let's hear some other undecided. I'm gonna pick on you, Kristen, you know I am. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just right here.
But, okay.
Yeah, I just think part of me thinks that sure, it would help. It always helps if you have similar backgrounds, and
okay.
It's comfortable, and it probably helps. But it's not necessarily going to be the
okay.
The,
good enough.
Yeah, maybe a knowledge thing, because you see, all the little kids are over here. Not all the like adults.
Well, that's okay. Emily.
I don't think it really matters. If what your background is, because if you, when you get married, if you decide that you want to grow and learn with that other person, you know, your background can, I mean, you can change certain things and you can teach the other person certain things. You don't have to come from the same type of family or background or country or anything, because you can sort of mix and learn together. And,
okay. Thank you. Go ahead. Please listen.
I just wanted to say, I'm going to go on the religious part. I have a niece who married an atheist, and now she's gone with him, which is, you know, I'm sad about this.
Okay.
You know, so.
Okay. Part of the issue is church practices. A lot of times when you have, not atheist, but when we have a mixed denomination marriage within the Christian faith, not an interfaith marriage, but a mixed denomination marriage. One of the two sometimes doesn't go to church anymore. Okay?
Yeah.
Let's hear from this side. Carol Lee.
Well, I speak from bitter experience. 10 years ago, I would have been over there. In fact, I would have been saying, oh, all you people on the other side of the room, you're just, I don't know, you're, dare I say it, Republicans. I would have been a very idealistic person about this up until 10 years ago. I married a Jewish atheist. The divisions between our two families destroyed the marriage. And I mean, I was part of it too, but now I feel differently.
Okay, okay. Denny.
You really don't marry just one person. It's two families joining together, and there's so much interplay between the two families. It will lower the quality of your marriage. You may stay married, but you may not be as happy as you would with some with two families of similar backgrounds. Okay? Paul.
From my experience with counseling and marrying people receiving divorce, it's not absolutely essential, but it might be the most important factor in a happy marriage.
Okay. One more.
I think this one.
Go ahead.
I think there's a lot of value in similar backgrounds. I happen to come from a family of 13 children. Now try to figure that one out.
Well, I got six, so I'm
okay.
Half.
But what I'm saying is, I think it's an advantage, but I don't think it's, and it makes it easier and all that. But when I look at the life of my 12 siblings, I have to think quite pretty hard. I wouldn't want to take a stand one way or the other.
Okay, thanks. Go ahead.
Yeah, what I heard the question missing was a family background.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that is extremely important. My family, my whole extended family has all kind of come from a similar background. And the way that those marriages have worked has been really neat to see. So for me, I'd like to see someone who's been brought up in a similar family to mine, so we have the example of the kind of love that two parents need to have with their families. Someone who's come up, been brought up in a broken home, I think it would be hard for me to be in relationship with and to raise children with because of the differences in understanding how that
works. Okay. I do want to say that people who are in blended families can have the same values as people who have been in the same family. I also want to say, however, that one of the issues of backgrounds could be a difference in values. A difference in background could mean a difference in values. Where it really gets sticky, youth, is in issues of chemical dependency and family dysfunction and things like that. If you marry someone who has been raised in an abusive family, the likelihood for that person to become an abuser is much greater than someone who does not come from an abusive family situation. Okay? No one here is trying to destroy idealism. I think, Kelly, you really said it right on when the country has to deal with the infusion of different cultures and make it work. Okay? But there's also some strengths here as well. Okay. Second question. If I get married, it will not make a difference if the person I marry is less intelligent than I am.
Of course not.
No. True? False. If I get married, it will not make a difference. Mary is less intelligent than I am. True?
How can you make the true over there?
No.
Or false. You're going to give her like you just before you fall in love.
Okay.
I got pretty high standards.
Yeah.
Todd, we haven't heard from Pastor Todd yet.
Oh, I know.
Look at his wife. No, oh, she's okay.
Go ahead. No, for me, I that was not a high on my priority list of the characteristics as
she just had to be intelligence short. And
I think falling in love in a relationship is there's a lot more to it than head knowledge.
Okay.
Opposites attract.
Opposites attract. Okay. Andy.
It's not a factor.
Not a factor. Sean. Sean. Okay. Okay. Laura.
I'm sort of in the middle because it wouldn't really make a difference to me, but I wouldn't want to have someone that's stupid, but I wouldn't want someone, you know, that's super, super smart or anything like that. No, I just want someone or Sam or something. I don't know.
Well, that's,
I
you're, don't you're really playing, care. Yes, you do care.
Well,
and you're saying it very well. Okay, you're saying it very well. Kelly.
See, in San Diego, they're smart, they're stupid, and they're blonde.
Don't put yourself down.
Oh, I'm not really. See, it doesn't matter.
He only thinks dumb blondes are girls. In there, bottle blonde.
A lot of times you like look for a person just because of the physical aspect first. That's the first thing that's going to attract you. I mean, you're not going to go, you know, oh, she's this horrible looking person. She's not going to talk to them. I mean, if they don't look nice, you're not going to talk to them. I mean, so if you come up to someone and they act really stupid, like a ditz or something, I mean, maybe you'll just completely blow them off because they're just ridiculous. I mean, you'll do that. You're not going to think, oh, well, maybe they're just really nice people, and who cares if they're stupid? I mean, you're not going to really think that. I mean, most people are going to go, you know what, you're a real ditz. So I don't want to talk to you.
Okay. Okay, excuse me. Let's hear from this side. Sir, tell me your name.
Chu.
Okay.
I take it that we're working on things that are ideal.
Correct.
And I want to tell you, it's hard enough to get along with two people get along if they're not the same, if they are not the same intelligence and same ethnic background. Hard enough. Don't ever do it if you don't have to.
Okay. Deb.
I believe the relationships require balance. And I've seen over the years with many of my friends where there's been an imbalance of intellect, where as much as they may care about the other person, they sometimes use that to their own displeasure.
Okay.
They're not as supportive because they see over time that they're not as intelligent, and sometimes that ends up in creating them making fun of the other one, and I think that's hurtful, and I think that that is destructive in a relationship.
Okay.
And it has everything to do with interests.
Okay.
Everything. You're not talking about a minor difference of 5 or 10 points. You're talking about a real difference, and that has everything to do with different interests. Totally, Bob.
Okay, Kelly.
I think for like a relationship to work out, not only do you have to be kind of stimulated physically, but you have to do it mentally too. I mean, you have to have some kind of challenge from the other person in a sense.
Okay.
So you're in
the that's exactly okay.
Yes. Yeah, so like one here.
Well, I guess if like
use the middle.
If one of them's smarter than the other, it would be kind of weird because, I don't think that one should be smarter than the other because I'm not so smart myself. And it's just that.
Yes, you are.
Thanks for affirming that. Thank you. Go ahead.
But if like one's smarter than the other one's going to use it for that reason and like, I don't know. It's just different.
Okay, you said it well. Yes, sir, Justin.
I have a question. When you're talking about smarts, what are you talking about? Are you talking about stuff like school-wise education, math, geography?
One of my goals this week. Excuse me. One of my goals this week here is to finish Tom Clancy's latest book. Now, Tom Clancy's latest book is 845 pages long. All right? And I love Tom Clancy. My wife can read that book, and we can talk about that. If my wife isn't able to read that book, and I enjoy that, and I want to talk about that, it goes back to interests, to what Paul is saying, what am I going to do? Okay? My wife can appreciate and support the fact that I want to write things like that, take time away from the family to write these things, come out here to do that. That has a level of intelligence involved with that, to be able to support that. That's what I'm talking about, Justin.
Okay.
Go ahead, Kelly.
If you truly show interest in someone, you know, maybe you'll give them a little help. I mean, if there's somebody's illiterate, maybe you'll help them read.
Okay.
Help them take classes.
People never stop learning.
Okay. Marilyn says people never stop learning. One more, and then we got to move on. If I get married,
no.
The most important aspect about my spouse will be his or her responsibility.
What?
His or her ability to be responsible.
That's the most important.
No,
I just thought he was completely irresponsible.
True.
Yeah.
Or false.
Oh, false.
Wait, what's the question?
The most important aspect of the spouse I marry will be his or her able ability to be responsible.
Middle.
That's okay to be middle. If I get married, the most important aspect about my spouse will be his or her responsibility or ability to be responsible. Okay.
I mean, that's, yeah.
All right. Okay, just hang on. You who said false, what will be the most important aspect about the spouse you marry? Kill
it. Your responsibility.
Yeah, I don't believe it. Go ahead. What else?
I don't know if that's love.
Love. Four-letter word. Are you hiding because you want me to follow you?
No, I don't know.
Okay. Emily, what about you? What's the most important about your prospective spouse?
I don't know what the most important thing is, but there is one most important thing. It's a variety of things.
All right, a variety of things. Can you pick out one? Or not?
Responsibility is one of them, and intelligence and interest and love.
Okay, cool. Deb?
I think that love requires responsibility. It absolutely is the basis for which love is extended to another human being. And without that, then you can't really have a fully functioning relationship.
One of the biggest issues that I see in premarital counseling, especially with young people, is that guys still want to be part of the softball scene and the bar scene. And they get all upset when their fiancés get bent out of shape because they're not home by 1:30 or 1:45. And they act like their fiancés are their mothers. But they're not. All their fiancés want them to be is be responsible. And accountable. Okay, let's sit. Go back to your small groups, please.
I think responsibility basically covers all of these things in marriage.
Great, super. Please be seated. Let's try to do one more. I need a female volunteer, please. Go ahead.
And what?
You're gonna read?
Oh,
okay.
You're right. Yes, from here to there. Okay?
Listen up!
Jenny Tolliver is 13 years old. She lives with her mom and dad and brother and sister. Jenny's mom and dad have been married for 16 years. The crisis in Jenny's life has just begun. One recent day after dinner, Jenny's mom told her and her brother and sister that she was divorcing Jenny's father. She said their father had found a girlfriend he would rather be with. This is Jenny's story. I never thought it would happen to me. I mean, I've had friends whose parents were divorced, but I always felt rather safe and secure. Sure, my mom and dad argued, but whose parents don't argue? It's all part of life, isn't it? When my mom told me that it had happened, I couldn't believe it. The first thing I thought was that dad wanted to leave us because we kids never got along. I mean, we're constantly at each other's throats. I wonder if dad just wanted some peace and quiet. But sometimes I think that if only we kids could have been a little bit more well-behaved, none of this would have happened. But then I should have seen it coming. For the last year or two, my dad has never been home. And then when he is home, he doesn't stay home very long. He usually just grabs a bite to eat and then goes back to the office. At least that's what he said. My trouble with all of this is that I'm not sure I can trust anyone anymore. Sure, I love my father, but how can I trust him after he left my mother for another woman? Sorry. What's worse, I really wonder how all of this is going to affect me when it's time for me to get married. I mean, I see the pain my mom is going through. Since she told us, it's like somebody died. She doesn't talk, she doesn't eat. And at late night, I hear her rummaging around the house. I never want to go through what is happening to her. Maybe the best thing to do would be never to get married. I wish this never would have happened. I wish my father wouldn't leave.
I need to ask a question really in a sensitive manner. How many of you live with parents who are divorced? Okay.
Oh, wait.
Okay. Please talk about this. You've got three questions. If Jenny came to you, what would you say to convince her otherwise? that it's not her fault. Jenny says she will never trust anyone again. Do you feel the same way? Why? Jenny says that her parents' divorce might make her afraid of marriage. What would you say to Jenny about the risks and pain of marriage? A lot of you have lived this. Try to be open about it, please. Go ahead. Maybe you're down to four people. Can you stay in your group anyway? Or unless you want to disperse. Okay, we've got four more groups. Sir, you go that group. DK wants his dad. Dieter, you go that group. Sir, you go over here, two, okay? John, over here. Jeremy, over there. Okay? Okay, we've got about 4 minutes. Take some time. Okay, let's bring it to a close. Couple things. One is, these are copies of a catalog for Oxford Youth and Family Institute that have two of my publications in them. I don't want to take them back to Minneapolis. Please take them. The two publications are Barriers, Bridges, and Building Blocks, which has been entirely rewritten and will be published this fall under the title of Bridging Beyond the Barriers. That includes 25 case study lessons similar to these on the catechism, as well as 25 family student lessons with different case studies. It also describes a book called Passages and Pathways for Parents, which is workshops for parents of preschoolers that deal with subjects like how many kids are going to have at the birthday party? Who's in charge of the remote control? What about divorce?
Ryan.
With preschoolers? What are your values for your babysitters? And things like that. So, please, I'm giving stuff away. I'm not selling anything. You have a choice if you want to buy. Please take these. I don't want them. Secondly, especially to our guests, I know San Diego, people are leaving. Who else is leaving tomorrow?
Today.
Okay. Thank you for being here. And let's close together with the Lord's Prayer.
Can we, on behalf of Margaret, say a thank you to John for leading us? Yes.
Let's stand and close with the Lord's Prayer. Gracious God, we ask your blessings upon us as we come and we go. We thank you for the relationships that we have established this week. And we pray that the life that you have given us will continue, not only now, but forever. We thank you for the gift of your Son, Jesus, who has given us that eternal life. And we pray together the prayer that your Son taught us to pray. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
The last session we have will be Saturday at 10:30.
I'd like to meet the San Diego...